What if you could see what's happening inside your body? Prenuvo's whole body scan screens for hundreds of conditions, including many solid tumors, as early as stage one, all in under an hour. And now, you can go beyond imaging. With 80-plus blood biomarkers that help complete the picture, this Labor Day, save $300 off your scan when you book at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com. Save $300 now through September 8th at prenuvo.com. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to Sunday Take for September 21st, 2025. I'm your host, Blois Olson. And this week's show is going to go a little deeper with one of the veterans, one of the long-serving legislators in Minnesota of both the House and the Senate, someone who's been a tax chair in the House and the Senate. Senator Ann Rest announced this week that she is going to retire and not seek re-election in 2026. And there was some pressure behind the scenes. State Rep Mike Freiberg said he would run no matter whether or not she ran again or not. But you'll hear from Senator Rest this hour on what has changed in the legislature. And wait till the end, because she has some wise and sage advice and perspective about the current legislative dynamics, those who serve in our legislature, and something that can be learned and thought of from both sides of the aisle. Well, we finally got the news that Governor Tim Walz was running again, and that's what my take will be about. He held a rally on Friday. That was the same day that Tom Hauser and Channel 5 and Survey USA announced a poll that showed a plurality of Minnesotans don't want Governor Walz to run again, and that his favorable and unfavorable are tied at 47. Reflecting the state of affairs here in Minnesota, I don't think we're surprised by that, nor should we be, with an equally divided House and a narrowly divided Senate. Senate Gun Control and Gun Policy Working Group met this week. And if you want a sense of the tone of our politics on issues of school violence, gun safety, gun violence, watch that hearing. It's a telling tale of the positions, the Constitution, and the reality of our politics and our personalities and our positions. Similarly, at the same time, the House Fraud Committee met this week. And on that day, just a day after he announced his reelection, Governor Walz decided to drop an executive order on fraud and fire someone in charge of the housing and stabilization program that is the subject of new charges this week from the U.S. attorney. And so while the headlines seem the same, the mood still seems different after the last few weeks. And so I think we should dig deep into the knowledge of a veteran senator and legislator on Minnesota's policies related to taxes and economics. And as always, I hope you're enjoying a cup of coffee on a fall-like Sunday morning. If you were at Farm Aid this weekend, I hope you enjoyed it. When we come back, Senator Ann Rest on Minnesota tax policy and what she still wants to get done with one more legislative session. This is Sunday Take on...
What if you could see what's happening inside your body? Prenuvo's whole body scan screens for hundreds of conditions, including many solid tumors, as early as stage one, all in under an hour. And now, you can go beyond imaging. With 80-plus blood biomarkers that help complete the picture, this Labor Day, save $300 off your scan when you book at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Save $300 now through September 8th at Prenuvo.com. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
News Talk 830, WCCO. We are back on Sunday Take. And as I mentioned in the open, my guest is Senator Ann Rest. She's a long-serving legislator in the House and the Senate, most notably as a tax committee chair in both bodies. She made the announcement this week that she will not seek re-election in 2026, and she joins me now. Senator Rest, thanks for joining me, and thanks for your years of public service.
Well, very kind, and it's a pleasure to be with you.
Let's just start with the decision to not seek re-election next year. What went into it, and what do you think the next year looks like for a very closely divided Senate?
Well, to just as a general statement to the second question, it's going to be very, 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 very challenging. But my own decision came from 3.5 years ago when I was making a decision, like I do the fall of every interim before an election takes place, about whether I would seek re-election. And at the time, as you're well aware, Democrats were in the minority in the Senate, and I wanted to have an opportunity to serve once again after 6 years in the majority. And so I made that decision to run for this additional term with the support of my family, but with the understanding that if I got back in the majority, that I would make these 4 years worth every single minute of that decision, and that I would be retiring at the end of this term. So it's been against that backdrop that I have been working, not just in the tax area, but mostly in that, obviously, to for an agenda that I think in particular sets Minnesota on a path to the future that recognizes the advancements we can make in technology, and to be competitive with that, advances in certainly in tax policy and environmental policy, and that I can use these 4 years to advance that and to talk continuously and about what Minnesotans want to see in our future, and that we embrace the 21st century. We're already 25 years into it, and not cling to the 1950s, particularly in tax policy. And it's not easy, but I've been working hard on that, and I'm going to use these next 14 months, including the interim now, as well as during the 2026 legislative session, to accomplish some of those goals, or at least to advance the thinking about what Minnesotans want and what I want as a Minnesotan for the future of our state.
When it comes to tax policy, just because you've been through the debates, both in the minority and the majority, with different governors of different parties, what are the two or three key items you think the state either still needs to do or should hold on to as part of tax policy to remain competitive and look at the future?
Well, I do believe that we made great strides in 2023 in making Minnesota's income tax policy one of the most progressive in the nation. We're one of a dozen or so states that adopted a very progressive child tax credit, which brings children and their families, one third of them, out of poverty. And what was really significant about Minnesotans, as opposed to what the federal tax credit had been, is that we made it permanent. It was not just for a year or two, but it's part of our permanent tax code. And that, I think, is really significant. What we were not able to do in 2024, given the state of our economy then, and in 2025, was to address the challenges to middle-income families with the rising costs of childcare. Some families in Minnesota, and we didn't have a very good record on it. Some families in Minnesota are paying $16,000 to $18,000 to $20,000 a year for good childcare, and the impact of that falls mostly on working women who had embraced flexible timing and scheduling for their continuing in the workforce. But when we encountered the requirement, either in private economy or in government, that said, as we recover from the pandemic, we want people who work to go to work. And that challenge to flexible scheduling has been a significant one, and generally, I believe is acknowledged that falls more heavily on women in the workforce than at all levels than it does for men. So in 2026, I will once again, and hoping that we have the resources to do that, is to improve Minnesota's child and dependent care credit. We had a bill to do that in 2025. We didn't have the resources. I'm going to be returning to that. A second initiative is focuses on technology and the ag economy, and Minnesota being a hub for jet fuel, a change in jet fuel, so that we can reduce the reliance on jet fuel, to embrace sustainable aviation fuel, which Minnesota is well suited to become a hub for. And we made some progress in 2024, but we need to continue that, looking at, we have the support of major environmental groups, ag groups, that we take a look at the kind of tax credit that we already had in place, but is it the right one? Is it the best way to both incentivize and to reward research and building of plants, et cetera, for sustainable aviation fuel? And of course, as you well know, Delta Airlines has been a big promoter of it. With regard to local governments, we have an opportunity that we missed out on in also in 2025 to set in place a system for local sales tax initiatives by local governments that are approved and supported by their constituents without having to return to the state to okay those projects. We have a lot of policy in place, and I'm encouraging local governments, since we weren't able to get it done, to nevertheless introduce proposals that would take into account the recommendations that came from local governments themselves, who have been studying this and discussing it for a couple of years now. And I've certainly been very involved in that. And then finally, and I guess it's a perennial challenge, is to be very much focused on the impact of potential increases in property taxes. And we know that commercial industrial property valuations are going down, particularly in our urban centers, as the valuation of residential property is increasing. And to make sure that the burden on homeowners is one that we can indeed deal with and pay a lot of attention to, so that our housing is the goal of affordable housing, but also of housing that is owned by middle income taxpayers stays within reasonable bounds.
When you think about tax credits, tax cuts, tax policy, local, county, state, Minnesota has obviously been a progressive tax state.
Right.
There's also some sense that, you know, it's hurting some of our competitive edges when it comes to business, but yet our quality of life remains high. Where do you think the state is? Where do you think the Democratic Party is? Is there a good balance, or do we need to kind of shift our sails one way or another to be clearer to business and property owners in Minnesota?
Well, I think we still struggle to right size our tax system. We used to talk about the three-legged stool, and property income and sales tax. And the governor last year had a very innovative, for the time, because it's very hard to talk about sales taxes, where the basic good tax policy is a broad base and a low rate. And he certainly, and with my support as well, and I've tried it before, and to do that, and it is the sales tax system in particular that is just caught in the mid 20th century. We have moved from an economy, a consumer economy, to services and away from goods. And so, instead of, for example, buying a vacuum cleaner, we have house cleaning services, and they bring their own vacuum cleaners. and we haven't really embraced that in a meaningful way. And I, what we do, quite frankly, is the opposite. We tend to look for some new thing that we can give a sales tax exemption to. And some of them are obviously very worthy, but we need to respond more to that challenge of recognizing that we are a service-oriented economy, and and to understand the with a low rate that the sales tax should be imposed at the end at the consumer level, and that we really need to accept that a low rate on a broad base will benefit all of us at any level of income.
When you say it like that, and you think about the debates you have, even amongst Democrats about tax credits for businesses, tax credits for investment, two come to mind last year at the end of session, the R&D tax credit, and right. then the data centers. Is that a competitive issue for Minnesota? Does Minnesota risk not being competitive with peer states, or do we have other things that you believe, you know, Minnesota can hold its own when it comes to recruiting and attracting businesses?
Well, I certainly do think that the improvement we made in the R&D credit at the end of session is a very positive sign to Minnesota businesses. I'm less interested in what we call the investment credit, because that is indeed experienced more by many more affluent individuals. But the R&D credit invests in Minnesota businesses itself, and I think that initiative was well placed and has been well received. The competitive edge in the with regard to the data centers, I think our data centers bill was well balanced. We removed the sales tax exemption for data centers, but these folks are still paying property taxes, they're paying corporate income taxes to Minnesota, and I believe that was a reasonable trade-off, quite frankly, and we put in place in the data centers bill any number of guardrails of kind of choke points to make sure that we are and that the state and all the agencies that are involved in that deed and the Department of Revenue, et cetera, are paying attention to how Minnesota fits into the economy that is looking, nationwide, that is looking forward to increased demand on energy, and how we can achieve that at lower costs and more efficiently. And I believe that the companies themselves are interested in that, in those efficiencies, and are the ones that are really doing the research to achieve those goals. And we just need to be a good watchdog in that. And I believe we can be and will be.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to dig more into kind of the dynamics within the Democratic Party right now with economic policy. My guest is Senator Ann Rust. She announced this week that she would not seek re-election in 2026. You're listening to Sunday Take, and I'm Lois Olson. We are back on Sunday Take. My guest this week is Senator Ann Rust. She's been in the legislature since the 90s as a tax chair in the House and the Senate. And one of the things that is a national story, and we're experiencing it here right in Minneapolis, is the rise of the DSA, or Democratic Socialists, within the Democratic Party. You're very familiar with tax policy, economic policy. Is this that much of an outlier for Democratic policy, or do you think it gets overblown or overhyped by those of us in the media?
Well, You know, I go back to one of the first principles of the Democratic Farmer Labor Party, and that is we are a big tent, and that we have embraced principles and convictions from the left to maybe not the far right, but certainly certainly right of middle, and I. And I believe that we can continue that. And I don't know whether it's fair to say the media overblows some of those differences, but you know, I am not a socialist, and I do not embrace the what I see as some of the basic tenets of the DSA. But if they want to be part of the Democratic Party and to have some influence, that's just fine. But the Democratic Farmer Labor Party is not going to become the Democratic Socialists of America. And I believe that the DSA advocates and members need to acknowledge that, and that if they want to continue to be a part with us, that they need to understand that we do indeed have this big tent philosophy, and we're not about to give it up.
One of the stories this year that we're all coping with is political violence. You mm-hmm. were one of the members of the legislature who was visited by an assassin, but you did not, he did not act, thank God.
Thank you.
Can you talk about the tone and tenor of our politics in the decades that you've been serving? And any, you've always been level-headed. That's what I will say since I've met you in the 90s. What can you say about the way in which people can learn from plenty of legislative fight or political fight that you've been through, but the civility by which you've conducted yourself and encouraged others to conduct themselves?
Well, quite frankly, I believe that the greatest enemy of civility is social media, and a social media in which those that participate in it enjoy anonymity. They enjoy not a lack of accountability for the sentiments that they express there, and that. And that there are no rules left. And I think we make a mistake if we allow the that lack of rules to invade our political institutions, so that we are very careful about what how we characterize the views of people who are different, who have different views than we do, and that we can indeed continue a discourse based on ideas and not on personalities, and that is that's been a difficult challenge. And I believe it is increasingly a difficult challenge. However, I also believe it just takes political will to stop it. You can decide, any politician, any commentator can decide not to use those explosive terms in characterizing people with whom they disagree. That they can do it with, you know, basic good manners, if you will, and still not shy away from vigorous debate, and I try my best, and certainly in public settings, to be mindful of the impact that my words will have on others. either in support of their ideas or in opposition to their ideas, and to, as much as we can, ignore whether there is an R or a D or a DSA, for that matter, that follows any person in public life's comments. I'd like to think that on the Senate Tax Committee that we I hear bills that are Republican bills, that are DFL bills, that are from the right and from the left, and then we make choices about what we include in our omnibus bills. And I, for one, when that bill is put together, I quite frankly, if there are any tax increases in it, I don't expect any necessarily any Republican support, but that doesn't mean that their bills for their communities, for their local governments, for their constituents are not going to be included in the Senate taxes omnibus bill. That is not the way we operate in the committee, and we certainly have our members are they're not mummers. They talk up. Well, they're not. Right. They talk, and we have vigorous discussions in the committee, because we have people who are thoughtful and who are knowledgeable and who certainly have a point of view about what good tax policy is. And we are able to do that without resorting to cheap shots, if you will. Doesn't mean we don't like to be clever in our criticisms. We certainly do, but it is in a spirit of how can we get to a good point in our discussion so that we understand each other's views, because we listen to one another, even if in the end we're not going to get to the same place. And I also like to think that, you know, sometimes people say, well, you just need to compromise, split the difference. But you can have, let's say you have a bill that that wants to, let's say, spend, let's put it as a spending thing, that wants to spend $6. Well, the compromise is not going to be, well, we'll compromise and split the difference and we'll only spend $3. The compromise is maybe the better way forward is to only spend $2. Or maybe the better way forward is to spend $7. And our duty and our obligation is to get there. And we strive to do that. And I appreciate the contributions that come not only from the DFL members, but from the Republican members as well. And certainly I work well with Senator Bill Weber, and Senator Carla Nelson is a former chair of the Tax Committee, very knowledgeable people, as well as Senator Miller and Senator Drazkowski, and then the and also the members on the DFL side.
My last question is really about the culture of the legislature and how you've had a saying, I've heard you say, that the campaign ends when you enter the chamber or you enter the building. But it seems as though there's a more activist-minded legislator in the younger crowd, in the newer members. We also know that 80% of legislature is new within the last 8 years. Experience, institutional knowledge. How has that changed the culture? And is there a way to get back to a more policy-minded membership rather than a politically minded membership?
Well, thanks for raising that point. I do indeed understand that a number of folks who want to be involved in the legislature run because they have in the past been activists or advocates for a particular point of view on a particular set of policies. And not only should you leave your campaign at the door of the chamber, but you should leave your zealotry, quite frankly, and remind yourself after you take that oath of office that you're there as a policymaker. You're not there as an activist at a rally outside the door of the chamber. You are inside the chamber, and your constituents and the people of Minnesota and other districts expect that you will take a broader view of public policy than just that, even though it's important, but just that of an advocate or activist. And we have more and more people who come in as advocates and activists and need a learning curve to understand that their real job is to be a public policy maker on a very, very broad spectrum of issues that come before us.
Well, Senator Rest, I want to thank you for the time today. I know that we will talk plenty down the line, including transparency has always been important to me on sustainable aviation fuel, which I work on behalf of Delta. So I want to make sure our listeners know that. But your experience and knowledge is something that I think we need to transfer as much as possible over time here, because Minnesota has some big questions ahead. And I know a lot of people seek your counsel on those. So thanks for joining me on Sunday Tech.
You're more than welcome. Thank you, Blois.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. I'm going to audio frame that last statement by Senator Rest and share it widely these next few months and years. This week's take is about the minute-by-minute, day-by-day dynamics of politics in our media and social media. From cable news to talk radio to X to TikTok or choose your channel, the breathless debates and shots and pokes are not healthy. We've talked about it before. But today I want to give you a take on how I plan to view the 2026 governor's race. Longtime listeners will know that I pay a lot of attention to governor's races, and I plan to do the same about the 2026 governor's race. But there's still plenty of time to discuss Governor Walz, the Republican field, the issues, and we're going to take our time. So Governor Walz has been invited on Sunday Take again. We'll see if he appears in this election cycle. I hope he does. But I'm going to hold off till at least November on discussing the 2026 governor's race or writing about the dynamics or anything like that. First and foremost, we have some city elections that mean a lot to our state. And second, I'm going to work to not exhaust myself or look at the little things in the first months of this governor's race and Governor Walz.
What if you could see what's happening inside your body? Prenuvo's whole body scan screens for hundreds of conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one, all in under an hour. And now you can go beyond imaging. With 80 plus blood biomarkers that help complete the picture. This Labor Day, save $300 off your scan when you book at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com. Save $300 now through September 8th at prenuvo.com. Terms and conditions apply.
On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina Deanna Roga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
But let's see how this campaign launches. Let's see what the messages are and see what their strategy is. And you see, that's my take this week is, let's wait and see before all these stories get reacted to in the final minutes. If we didn't learn anything in the last 2 weeks, it's that overreaction and the wrong reaction only foments more hostility and partisanship. And so I'm renewing my wait and see, watch a story develop, watch a race develop before we jump in and know what the mood of the voters is going to be in 2026. I hope you have a peaceful week, a great week. I'll be with on at 6:20 for the morning take. Benita's on a vacation, so we'll be with Rena and Hauser. You can always check out our stuff at thedailyagenda.com. This is Sunday Take, and thanks for listening. Next week, a Minneapolis mayor's debate with all the candidates. I'm Blaise Olson. Until then, have a great week.
What you're listening to presumably doesn't suck, so neither should your sound system. Sonos lets you listen seamlessly from room to room. Same great sound, expertly tuned, astonishingly clear. It's not magic, but it's not not magic.